This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. We're going to spend the next year or so on a new education project. We're calling it Learning Curve. It's about technology in the classroom, how computers and the internet are changing just about everything in education, the way teachers teach, the way kids learn, and the way businesses are trying to cash in. To get things started today, a quick history lesson about technology in the classroom. Marketplace's Adrian Hill has it.
It's 1976. Liza Loop goes to a meeting of the Homebrew Computer Club in Silicon Valley.
They were engineers and hobbyists and all kinds of neat people, among them Steve Wozniak.
Yeah, that's Steve Wozniak, the guy who co-founded Apple Computers.
And I stood up and said, I'm doing a public access computer center and I'm taking computers into schools.
Pretty run-of-the-mill stuff today. But back then, it was almost radical. Woz was intrigued. He found her after.
And said, this is great. This is why I'm building this computer.
And a month later, he came to her computer club with a gift.
And it was the first Apple.
Apple One. For everything that Apple's become, its first computer just didn't work that well. Loop says it took forever to load BASIC. And then after 25 minutes, the whole thing crashed.
I took it back to Woz and said, you know, I really think this is a great idea. I'm all for it and I really want to use it, but I can't use this machine in a classroom. You're going to have to do something else.
In some ways, that's been the story of education technology for decades. Great hope, ambition, often expense, followed by disappointment. Way back in 1922, Thomas Edison thought he had it all figured out.
Edison made a statement that he thought that within a decade or so, schools would be completely revolutionized, that films would be the major means via which learners acquired skills and knowledge.
Robert Reeser is dean in the College of Education at Florida State University. Turns out Edison was a better inventor than prognosticator. Films fizzled out. They were expensive. Projectors were unreliable. It was hard to find the right film for the right class. Then came...
Hello, boys and girls. How are you today?
Radio. And broadcasts like this from Wisconsin School of the Air.
Now, boys and girls, get into a circle. I want to talk to you a little bit.
School boards and universities, even commercial networks like CBS and NBC, poured money into creating classroom broadcasts, textbooks of the air. But
that enthusiasm died out.
Enter teaching machines with names like Cyclo Teacher, InstructoCard, The Edumator. Here's psychologist B.F. Skinner in 1954.
As soon as a student has written his response, he operates the machine and learns immediately whether he is right or wrong.
Dozens of companies made these devices in the early 60s. Turns out buttons and levers weren't a great way to learn. Which brings us to television.
The following is from a cooperative project for acquiring skills essential to learn.
TV combined sight and sound. It could be live. It could help with teacher shortages. The Ford Foundation invested millions. The feds pitched in cash. By 1971, researchers estimate more than $100 million had been poured into educational television. Again, says Reeser, same story.
We see one medium after another coming along, a lot of enthusiasm for that medium, followed by disappointment in the extent to which that medium changed the nature of instruction taking place in classrooms.
So when computers became a force in the classroom in the early 80s, when the numbers tripled between 80 and 82, and tripled again by 84, and Time magazine ran a cover story called Here Come the Micro Kids, educators were skeptical. But now they're reconsidering. Maybe this time is actually different. Themis Barangas is chief technology director at LA Unified School District.
We're in the cusp now of that big revolution.
LA Unified has bet big on tech, $1 billion big, to give every student an iPad. And around the country, other schools, districts, the government are buying in.
I think we're starting to see a maturity in the user-friendliness and the interfaces with media and technology.
In other words, the machines work. All you have to do is turn them on. The challenge is finding the best way to use them for individual kids.
And look for activities, learning experiences, face-to-face experiences, online, each other experiences in such a way that I can really create a personalized, individualized learning plan for every child.
Personalized learning. That's the tech promise we're being sold now. Computers and tablets and smartphones and the internet will allow our kids to learn in the right way for them at the right speed for them. And data will be gathered along the way to let teachers know what's working and what isn't. Companies and investors are spending billions to make change happen for real this time.
A lot of this is happening really fast. You need to slow down.
That's USC education professor Patricia Birch.
You see this in a number of the big districts. So EdTech initiatives are being rolled out within a year or 2 years to all students.
The risk, she says, is that you don't want students to be guinea pigs.
You don't want to be working out the bugs on kids who can't afford, no kid can afford to lose a year of school.
Because, as we've learned over time, not all educational technology is worthwhile. And the promise is just the beginning. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
You can add your personal history of technology and education to the one we have put together. And check out our Tumblr as well. It's all at marketplace.org/learningcurve.